Welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. Now you might be asking,
why are they called the Godfathers of Podcasting?
Well, that's because they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider. You can find entire episodes in video format and killer merch on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. To share your feedback, drop them an email at info@godfathersofpodcasting.com. Send a text anytime to 437-375-2000. Now, here are your hosts, two guys that have been broadcasting online since 1996, the godfathers of podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. It is April 11th. And like the man said, my name is Donnie, and that man next to me, he is the Hall to my Oates, the Ernie to my Bert, the Blake to my Gwen, although I hear they may be on the rocks. That's Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell. What up, Tid?
Did you say I was the Ernie to your Bert?
Yeah.
No. No, I would say I was more the monster to your cookie.
Oh. I don't want to be eaten by you.
Oh, yes, you do, brother.
Although I think Ernie and Bert were eating each other quite a bit, if you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, allegedly. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I mean, first, you know, they never had any girls over at that house.
Yeah, it was the first televised homosexual relationship that I was aware of, and I wasn't even aware of it.
I mean, did it matter when you were a kid?
No.
It wasn't until
you liked Ernie and Bert.
Yeah, it wasn't until you became an adult and you were like, oh, huh. Guess that's a thing.
Yeah. When I got older and I was like, you know, Bert's kind of hot.
Really? I mean, anything can be used if you're adventurous.
Anything is insertable. This week's episode is brought to you by Vigilante. The new album from your bro Danny O is dropping on May 10th. You can get the fire orange vinyl, you can get the CD or the digital download. They're all available on DannyO.com. That's Dan-E-O.com. The new theme you heard off the top of the show is a track on the album, which we will be talking about shortly. So make sure you go ahead and get your ass over to DannyO.com and pre-order Vigilante now. Tid, before we get to our guest, anything fun and exciting from this past week?
You know what I'd like to do first is I would love to shout out Baronial. And I only say that, because I am just about out of soap right now. That stuff is
you're out of product?
Nah, yeah, just about, brother. It is fantastic stuff. It smells absolutely great. It works wonderfully. Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's the thing that I'm going to tell you and everybody. This isn't a spiel because I don't give a shit about the soap. It lasts longer than you would expect from like a one of these, you know, artisanal small company soaps. You don't expect it, but right. This stuff lasts, man. And I have a lot of body to be bathing up. You know what I'm saying? So shout out to those dudes and the ladies for getting it right. Absolutely 100%. And you still have
my head. You want to get a bar of their fine soap or any of their fabulous beard products, you can go to baronialbeard.com. We'll have the links up on godfathersofpodcasting.com as well as your link to go and pre-order Vigilante at dan-e-o.com. Before we get to the guest... Did you enjoy overall? Did you, because we spent the whole episode last week talking about it. So in a nutshell, did you enjoy WrestleMania weekend?
Yes. Yes, I did. It's been a long time since I've actually gone through the process, you know, of watching an entire weekend. Oh my God. It is. It is tough to do, but I did it. And I mean, it's an exciting time of year. You get to watch WrestleMania, you get to watch night one, night two, biggest show on earth, you know, that is kind of the catalyst for what time of year it is. And to some people, an even bigger event that happens right around the same time of year. I'm talking about opening day for Major League Baseball.
Oh, well, I know a guy that's jacked up about opening day of baseball. We'll talk to him in a second. Before we do, I just want to plug, if you do want to hear more WrestleMania recap and WrestleMania conversation, Tid and I, along with Brady Wedham, got into it on The Law. You can check that out this week. Also, I will be on with Boris this Sunday on TSN Radio on Sunday night's main event, talking about WrestleMania, talking about what happened last night on AEW with their big expose and all sorts of other stuff. So check out Sunday night's main event, check out The Law, all kinds of fun content for you wrestle heads out there. And if you're not into that shit, that's okay, because we got other stuff for you this week. Cool.
Done.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time now for the big hello. And you know, are we gonna bring him in? Yeah, I'm instantly interested in every inkling of his existence. No, I'm not. But that is the opening line to his unbelievably hot new track titled Like We. That video dropped just last week, and the response has been insane. So insane that we thought, even though he was on the show a few weeks ago, we just had to have him back on and talk about it again. This dude is just burning shit up. If you have ever listened to the show before, you don't know who the man is, brethren. He's an actor, writer, lyricist, educator, producer, musician. But of course, his favorite title is Dad. Hey, yo, yo, he rocks the sickest flows. He reps the illest crew. Sometimes he gets vexed about the shit that I didn't do. Because now he's checking for my friend. It seems she want a bubble too. Yo, dark honeys, Indians, light skin, Filipinos, Latinas, even some white tings. He's chuckling, but you know what? I remember back in the day, me and you was bros, steady rocking flows, shared a dream of fully making it into the pros, thinking of the fame, trying to run this game. Now the fact you think I'm acting whack has made you feel ashamed, but if he's too ashamed or has a problem with any part of this intro, me gotta treat him like this record and give him a nice beat. Give up right now for this Spanish Jamaican sensation. He is deadly. He is the bullfighter. He is the vigilante. This is your bro, Danny O.
What's up, Bridges? Well done, man. You know, I gotta say, man, I appreciate that intro. At first, when you started ripping the rhymes, I'm like, oh, Donnie wrote some new shit. I'm like, oh no, he's spitting my shit. He just has no flow.
Yeah,
he's Danny O with less.
Yeah, he's Danny, he's Donnie No is what Donnie he is. Yeah, he's like he's like the Carlos Mencia of rap, is what he is.
I just ripped off your lines and now you ripped off mine.
Yes, that's absolutely right. That's exactly okay. How it goes, bro. But thank you for that, man. Yeah, I know that's probably like you might be the only one on the planet who knows that song or would remember that song. It's over.
Oh, it's over?
Like 20 years ago and was just on a mixtape. And yeah, is that still your favorite joint, bro? You've had a lot of years
listening
to new Danny O joints. Okay.
It's Over was my favorite Danny O song until last week.
Okay. All right. That works for me.
So I will say, and this is no hyperbole, being 100% honest. So Dan sent me the full album of Vigilante. I don't know how long ago. A minute, right? It's been a while. Yeah.
Well, you guys got to hear it by the time I was on your show last time.
So we listened to the whole album. But I will admit, when I was listening to it, I was in one of those headspaces where I'm multitasking and I'm not really zoned in on the lyrics and I'm not really like focused. I listened to the single that you released the last time you were on the show, and I listened to that in great detail. But the rest of the album, I didn't really drill down into it. You know what I mean?
You made it ignore us.
A little ignore us, but I was like, you know, the album's good, but I'm not clicking on it yet. Right. And then you sent me the link to go check out the new music video. And I went and checked out the video and I realized, first of all, I think I have ADHD because the video was easier to watch than listening to the music.
That's for a lot of
people. I really, really, really like this track. Like I hollered at Dan. I didn't text him. I did the old man thing. I picked up the phone and I called him and I said, this is the best thing you've ever released.
Thanks, man.
Ever.
I appreciate it.
You know?
And it's true what you're saying, because even for me as the artist who's created all this music, it takes on a new life when you do visuals for it and then you drop it as a video. And I have never written a song. I think I might have talked to you guys about this last time. I've never written a song with the mindset that this will be the single, right? I create songs that are specifically meant to be, you know, important parts of the album, and you put all the songs together to create this project. It's not until it's finished that we start plucking songs off and going, okay, you know, what do we turn into a single? What do we use as a video? And when we shot Like We, and obviously released it as a single, even for me, it took on a whole new life. Like, now I'm seeing the visuals and like all my visions, you know, coming to reality. And then, of course, like you mentioned earlier, all the feedback I'm getting from it, people are telling me like, this is, I made a half joke online the other day. It's like, I think I finally superseded Dear Hip Hop. Like, people like, yo, this is your best shit. And you're not the only one to say that. And I'm kind of feeling that too, with renewed confidence after the video came out. So thanks for that call. And thanks for the plug. This is going in the direction I was hoping it would go.
I'll let Sid jump in. But before he does, I just want to say, I also sent that video link out to a whole bunch of people I know. And I had the exact same experience where, and I told you this already, where people were then picking up the phone, not texting, picking up the phone and calling me and going, that song is unbelievable. And I'm like, yo, thanks. I wrote it, right?
Yeah, of course. That sounds like the conversation went exactly that way.
I think what it is for me anyways, is it starts off like it hits and it's fun. It's got this super fun, like kind of almost like a Big Pun Twins kind of thing at the beginning. You know what I mean? Right. Dead in the Middle of Little Italy. Yep. Like, it's got that kind of whole, that tone to it or whatever. That's and then it just boom, stop. Ah, fuck you. Here we go.
Right.
Like, it's very super done. The video itself, dude. Talk to me about the process of doing that, because clearly you've never, like, this is something new. As I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, he's having a fucking blast doing this. How cool was that?
Super cool, brother. Two things I want to address based on your question, man. Thank you actually for pointing out how the song begins, because when I was in the studio with TJ, all of our brother TJ, you know, who engineers all my music, I recorded several takes of the beginning. And for those who haven't heard it yet, I'm instantly interested in every inkling of your existence. No, I'm not. There was on purpose alliteration by using several I words in a row. So that's like the lyrical point of it. But the delivery is what you're commenting on there, Tid. And that was purposely being sarcastic, because the song is calling shots on those who use social media to present themselves other than what's true. And I did a few takes, some not so sarcastic. And I was like, maybe it's a little corny. Maybe it's too, you know, I don't know, Eminem even, and people have been comparing it to Eminem. I appreciate you comparing it to Big Pun, because while Eminem is a huge compliment, Big Pun is a huge compliment. Those are two of the greatest MCs to ever live. That's what I was trying to get across, is I am making fun off the top, and now it's time to get serious and go in battle record style. The video that you brought up, of course, brings a whole new life to it. And it was a great process, because I want to shout out my man Flea Normality, a.k.a. Connor Dooley, who I met on my Hip Hop Food Drive tour of 2022. He is a videographer and photographer. And only just about a month and change ago, you know, we've been boys for the past year and change since the tour. And I saw that he shot a video for Hawaii Mighty and, oh man, his name escapes me. I believe it's Connor Price, who just got nominated for a Juno. I'm like, bro, I can't believe I didn't holler at you for a video before. And he's like, dude, let's do it up. So the process was fun. It was easy. He loved the track. We both threw ideas back and forth, including actually on set. I was like, bro, you know what we need to do? Let me hold up my phone and take a selfie. Shoot us taking the selfies, because that's sort of the gimmick of the point of the song. And it was a lot of fun. It was a cold day, though, bro. The day doesn't look like it in the video. But other than it being cold, it was a lot of fun. And what I'm really, really honored by is that the people that we shout out in the video, those who said they could make it, did make it. So shouts to the legend DJ Ron Nelson, my brother Lindo P, who got me started in this business, and more Juno Award winners, Ghetto Concept, all came through to be in the video. And those who couldn't come through sent me videos, like Socrates and Mishy Me. And so, man, just being amongst legends is still a thrill to me, and I'm glad we got to do that as part of the video too.
Lots of people you shout out in this track. Dream Warriors and Maestro, and
shouts to Blessing, like, of course, who did all that. The my feature artist, 2-time Juno Award winning artist, Blessed. Really he took the track to a whole new level. Not only did he write the hook, but when I sent him the verses, I remember him saying, this is a hit, before he wrote anything. Him writing the hook really took it to the next level. And then him adding the verse where he does shout out legends. I love the yin and yang of the song. Someone mentioned that online. My boy, Paul Salvatore, thank you for that. He's like, there's a yin and yang to this because Daniel's filing grievances and calling shots. But then Blessed uplifts and doles out flowers. So it's the yin and yang of, if you frontin' on social media, you draw my ire. Now here's all the people who never even needed social media to become legends. Right. And so I love that we do both of that in the song and the video.
I just needed Rap City. So going back to Blessed for a second, like you said, two-time Juno recipient, and we're talking about a guy who huge, you know, to reggae lovers everywhere.
Absolutely.
Talk to me about the process of just getting Blessed involved in this project.
Well, the crazy thing is that, and you know this because you helped design the cover, See No Evil, Hear No Evil is my second album 20 years ago. Blessed's on it. So we haven't worked together in 20 years. And there's no reason for that other than life and the way things go and you create music and time flies. So the process was kind of easy because I reached out to him. He's just one of those brethrens who maybe didn't speak to in a long time, but it's all love still. Sent him the track. And as I mentioned, he jumped all over it because he loved it before he even wrote anything. And I'm thankful because when I was writing it, you know, it's just this boom bap beat. Shouts to Charisma, aka Skiz from Monolith, for producing it. I just, you know, I went in on the lyrics and just something told me I need reggae. I need Badman energy on this song. And so he just laced it perfectly, man. It really took no time, actually. Like the song itself, my process took some time, but hitting up Blessed and getting him to send me vocals, that was the easy part. And unlike a lot of other collabos, I didn't really have to go back and forth. As soon as he sent me the hook, I'm like, oh my God, damn. It was catchy. You mentioned all the social media platforms. Like, that's what I was looking for. And then it was after that he surprised me with his verse. And I was like, oh, okay, now this song is complete now. So the process was amazing. And it was like that for the video, too. Shouts to Christy Skinner, because I got to meet Blessed's wife as part of the process. And she's so cool and supportive and just showed so much love to not just the process of it, but like promoting it. And it's good to be around like a family atmosphere. That's what it felt like on set and finishing this song.
So from the time that this song was being conceived, you said you just envisioned a reggae style hook.
Yeah.
Was it always going to be a reggae hook in your mind? Did you have any other iterations of a hook? And did you have anyone else in mind? Maybe your cousin Red Rat or someone
absolutely.
Else?
Like, I wasn't, so throughout the process of creating the Vigilante album, I was in talks with Red Rat, Chip Fu, shouts to Chip Fu, who, by the way, was on Boss Man, the former theme of this show, Lindo P himself, you know, and sometimes when you work through a project, certain songs, you just need to find that right fit. And it just so happened that it was blessed because the guest artist has to love the track as much as you, right? Sometimes it's like you might reach out to an artist and, like, for example, there are other songs on the album where you'll hear there are guest artists on the record who were sent other beats. For example, Cleanse My Soul, which Master Ace chose. That was sent to Quake Matthews. It was sent to Wordsworth. Quake chose another song. Barsman is the song that Quake Matthews is on. He was also sent Sober Sunday. Socrates chose that one, but he was given Barsman. To me it's as much about what my vision is as much as it is how the guest artist feels about being on the track, because it's got to be like we both have to really, really feel it. So sometimes it's like you're putting together pieces of a puzzle. You think you have the piece and you don't. The pieces fit in the right places, and Blessed on Like We was the right fit.
I think that's got to be the greatest part about doing a collaboration, though, right? It's like you think that you've got the perfect spot for this person, and they're like, so you send them all of this stuff, and you're like, they're totally going to hit me up, and we're going to do this one together. And then they're like, nah, you know what? I'd really like to do this other one. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what's the next step for it then?
For the song, the project? Well, thankfully, and I appreciate being on today's episode because I literally just launched, Tid's going to love this, I just launched the album promo campaign on the 10th of April, which just passed, because the album drops on the 10th of May. And man, I don't know why I remain superstitious about it, but that's the next step. Is we're going hard on album promo. So I love that this is my first podcast, which is only right. I will be on a ton over the course of the next month. Also, there is a listening party being scheduled, so I have no information about it yet, but we are planning for a listening party in the city of Toronto before the album drop. I will be in Ottawa for the Cranium Festival between May 3rd and 4th, another single and video is on the way, so I may as well also use this as the platform to give you some exclusive news. Another single featuring my mighty monolith brother, Nish, drops April 19th. It's called Supreme. You guys know the record, and that single and video will also drop before the album. So the train is rolling, man, and looking forward to seeing what happens with it.
And how many songs are on? How many songs are on this album?
This is a 12 us. Yeah, it meant to be 10. You won't be surprised.
So you did 10 and two bonus tracks is what you're telling me.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But you know, speaking on your point, Tid, about like just the creative process, man. Sometimes I always go into projects with an idea, and the idea turns into a thousand different things before it's its final product. And as I was working with Big Sprox, shout to him because he produces five joints on the album, Charisma, and I want to shout out Sky the Cook and Jax from Japan. Those are the three producers of the album. And sometimes you think, okay, I have what I think I set out to do. And then you hear another beat and you have another idea. And everything that I wrote needed to fit the theme. And as you guys know from the last time we spoke, Vigilante is all about killing the negativity in the world or the shit that was weighing on my mental health. And there were just things that I still needed to get off my chest. And I did. That turned into 12 songs.
I wanted to ask you about something, but before I did, I don't want to lose this thought only because it's so stupid. But we have a mutual friend of all of ours who a while back told me, this is only maybe a year or two ago, she said, oh, I got invited to a listening party. I'm like, oh, that's cool. She says, but sounds really boring. I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, what do? You just go there and everyone puts on headphones and listens?
Right.
That would be the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be people show up, just give them a set of earbuds, personalized earbuds that they can take home out of there.
Yeah. Right. And listen to whatever you want.
Listening party. I am listening.
Yes.
This is enjoyable. I want to say, this is more of a comment than a question, and I'll let you react to it. But you and I have had these conversations offline, Dan, and I'm impressed by the amount of hustle that you've been putting on Vigilante. The first two singles, we've talked about how in the past you would do the thing where it was like, you know, I'm going to share my Spotify thing on Instagram, which is going to post that same photo every time, and it may or may not get great engagement because to people it's like, oh, I saw that yesterday, right? And now you're doing a lot of customized marketing. Yeah. You're doing a ton of promotion, and it's getting some traction. But here's the funny thing. As digital savvy as you've become in this new world, you are still committed to production of physical media.
Yes.
You are still committed to printing CDs and pressing vinyl. Orange Fire vinyl, mind you.
Thank you.
And I wonder if there's a part of you that says, look, I get it. We're in the digital age of music, but at my soul, at my core, I cannot put out an album that does not have a physical version. I can't do it. I know it's cheaper. I know it's probably smarter. I know it's more economical. I know it's what the majority of the audience wants is just digital, but I can't do it. Is that where you're at?
100%. Obviously, you know me and you know that's true. I mean, as you guys see behind me, that's my, you know, I don't have them platinum style, but I'll put them on display anyway, bro. You know, I grew up in love with vinyl, man. You know, I've talked about it. I wrote songs about it. I'm literally sitting beside my turntable and my record collection behind me because right above toys was records. And to this day, I have such a joy playing records, and I don't know what it is about the experience, the placing of the needle on a vinyl and watching it spin and reading the liner notes as it happens. That's something we did in the 80s and 90s as kids growing up, and I haven't let go of it. why I've decided to still pay, make it part of my business practice is that there are people out there like me. Now, these are limited edition. We didn't go heavy on pressing, but yeah. Do we already have pre-orders? Yes, I continue. I even get people hitting me up personally because thankfully I have those type of loyal fans who live in the city. I'm like, save a record for me. I'm going to come by and grab it, or we're going to hook up and I'm going to grab it, because they are also collectors. I mean, even as I take a look at the backdrops there, you brothers are collectors. I see stuff behind you, Donnie, representing Star Wars and professional wrestling. I see football and luchador, you know, memorabilia behind Tid. You see vinyl behind me. We are all collectors and lovers of particular forms of art. And as you said, it is in my heart to go, I can't have this not exist physically for the people out there like me who wish to collect and add to their pieces, their art collection.
But so, I think,
I'm a collector and a lover.
I think at the same time, though, it's got to be like the most hip hop thing to do.
My bro, yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if there's a part of it, like, If you're into that hip hop culture, mm-hmm. and that like it comes along with it, because that's the roots of it is vinyl, right? Yeah. So you almost have to. You're not like, yo, here's my flash drive.
Yeah. 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 100%, brother. As always, Tid, you nail it, man. Like, that's exactly hip hop. Not just because, you know, that's what we came up doing in terms of like ones and twos cutting and scratching on turntables. But the product that is a record or cassettes, shouts to Urbnet, by the way, the label distributing my album, celebrating their 25th anniversary this year. They press cassettes for a lot of their artists and they sell.
Wow.
So, and I haven't done that, right? They're like, you want to do cassettes? I'm like, I think I'm going to, well, let's hold off on the tapes. Good for now.
Yeah, we can't do some reel to reels, like,
yo. But part of my heart would love to just for myself to own a car, like, hey, right? I have one. But to your point, Tid, yes, it is a hip hop thing to do, and that is also the mindset. We talked about this a little bit last time. That was also the mindset I went into working on this record. Is I really did go back to, I guess, the true essence of what got me into hip hop, and that is boom bap, neck snapping beats and lyrical content that is strong, you know, just rhyme wise, but also message wise. And all of it. I remember last time we were here, you asked me, is it a hip hop album? When we defined hip hop versus rap music and how important it is to the culture, the contributions to the culture, that the messages of the music and also the music itself adds to the legacy. So to your point, having it physically exist adds to the legacy, which is hip hop, man. You got to put it on wax.
The jokes about reel to reel, but I got to tell you, when I hear those words, I get a real visceral reaction, because it takes me back to my days when I was in school learning how to do this.
Right.
And I was there right at that time when Humber College was switching over from teaching kids how to use reel to reel and then how to use digital. And my old radio broadcast teacher, Bob Holiday, RIP, I don't know, I'm assuming he's dead.
Shout out OJ.
Wow. Yeah, no. Oh yeah.
We'll get to OJ. He was like this. He'd be like, well, they tell us that we have to teach you how to use this computer, but that's crap. The way to edit is on the reel to reel. It's like, oh shit. Okay. Well, I guess I better listen to this man. And I would sit there for hours with a razor blade and tape and little crayons. And I'm like this with the headphones on, and I'm just manually rewind, blip, 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 blip. Oh, I'm like, okay, just a hair. Okay, mark it with a crayon, snip, tape that shit back together.
Crazy.
But bro, it is such a satisfying way of editing. Like, obviously, digital editing or non-destructive editing, as they used to call it back in the day, is so much faster. But it's not nearly as satisfying. And so to that point, I understand your connection to physical media.
Yeah.
At some point, I'm going to go out and get myself a reel-to-reel machine just to have it in my home. And when I'm bored, I'm going to spool some shit up and start razor blading.
Wow, dude. I never did that. I've spooled tapes together. I've done some surgery on some cassettes, you know, when they get caught up in
with the pencil.
Yeah, you gotta carefully pull the tape out of the deck, reel it back in. Sometimes you gotta open the whole cassette, reel it back. Man, this is some old school talks right now, bro.
Well, when some asshole borrows your DOS FX tape and doesn't give it back in good shape, then that's what happens.
Exactly, man. Oh man,
I'm blown away by everything you've released so far off of Vigilante, and I think that this album is probably going to be your most lucrative to date. I've already had the vision, and I told you this already. I see a Juno in your future, at least a nomination. Yeah. You know, like this track right now, I smell nomination for this track. Like we, between you and Blessed, man, there's a Juno nom on the horizon.
I definitely appreciate that. Given his track record with Junos, maybe you're onto something. That'd be nice, obviously. I've actually had more than one person say that. And that's, to me, that's icing on the cake. I remember we talked about that last time. I would love for that to happen. No question about it. But, you know, the content of the record is so important to me, and the amount of energy and effort I put into it, it matters so much to me because this is my best album, without question. And, you know, just want to address something that you mentioned there, Don, like, yeah, I straight sucked at social media marketing before. No, hands down, didn't know what I was doing. I didn't. I still think I have a lot to learn. But going through the process of like discussions and meetings and figuring things out before this album was ready to go encouraged me to like create unique content for every release, every song, for the album itself. And yes, that's what my social media feeds have been predominantly filled with now, because similar to this, like this is content, obviously it's a podcast, right? So clips of this and every different piece of information that can be unique or interesting to my fan base has to become part of the campaign. And yeah, I wasn't doing that before. I was like, yo, it's out, you know, and expecting people to take interest because I wasn't really in tune with how it all worked.
It took the Field of Dreams approach.
Kind of, man. And I'll be honest, I also took the, I'm not really down with social media. I cannot tell you how many people still in the game, musicians, not just musicians, but different people of different, you know, talents in the world of art and entertainment go, no business with social media or, whatever for that. And it's just their excuse for, yeah, you may not really like it, but dude, it's not helping you. And I learned that it's, you know.
I feel like within the music world, especially when we're talking about independent artists, right? We're not talking about like the people that have big conglomerates pushing their shit out there for them. You're hustling for yourself, essentially, right? But I feel like when we look at, you know, a small sample size, small microcosm, but even just independent artists that guest on this show, feel like hip hop is the one genre that's really dragging their feet on that world when it comes to social media marketing, interest in doing shows like this and talking about your shit. We reach out to someone from the, you know, the folk rock, from a folk rock band. They're like, they're pumping shit out on Instagram nonstop. They're putting shit out there. They're making sure that you know everything about their day, and they're making you feel like you're their friend, so that when they announce that there's a concert, oh, I have to go see my friend. You know, and they build this online community. I feel like hip hop is the one genre that's still slow to get to that stage.
I don't know for sure, but I think this could be it. There are people in my life who I highly respect as incredible artists, and they're friends too. And they'll say stuff like, I don't even like performing. I don't like doing interviews. It's just their steez, bro. And I think, you know, I got a brethren, Ian Espinay, shouts to him, who reminded me recently. He always calls me up and we talk hip hop, and he goes, do you remember that time I was like, Dan, you got to get your music streaming? And I apparently said, I don't remember it that well, but I apparently said like, forget streaming, bro. Like, because, you know, like you and the cutting of the tapes, I was like, it's got to be vinyl, or if you don't own it, it's not a real album. And I do remember before having a Spotify account, sticking to those guns, like, no, I got to own this, da da da. Man, listen, I get it. The times have changed. Not everybody is hip to that yet. Some people are just like, it's not even, you know, to our conversation today, it's not hip hop to, you know, put something out digitally alone. Of course, there's a lot of people who don't subscribe to that. So maybe some people think it's not hip hop to be all self-promote-y or, you know, do shows all the time. Man, I can't speak for them, but I'm guessing that could be it, because I do know people like that.
There's this group that I've been listening to. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not. There's a group of guys out of Florida called the Same Olds. And they've been around for 6-7 years or whatever. They got the very, very hip hop feel, but like with a little bit of like Wu-Tang thrown in there, that kind of old dirty bastard kind of craziness. You know what I mean? But they've really managed to find a way not to interject both, so to speak. They're very much they're on TikTok. They've got all of their little clips. They're doing all of their little thing. And I think one of the things was is that it allows them to, people can see their stuff digitally and then send away and get a physical copy from them, their music. So, I mean, listen, it sounds like you've hired somebody about 30 years younger than you to teach you these ways of social media now. Is that what happened or what?
You're half right. I wouldn't say they're 30 years younger than me, but actually, all jokes aside, I'm working with a team of people. Some of them actually older. I do have a publicist. Shouts to Sasha Stoltz. Shouts to my brother Chris Jackson. There is a team of people who are working my publicity. Good. Again, shouts to Urbnet as well. Like, they are working my records as well. So this is just a team of people who they believe in the record. And that's something that was important to me. It's one thing to just hire someone or say, hey, can you do me a favor? But if they, Chris actually was kind of semi-retired from the whole music game. And he took a listen to Vigilante. He got it somewhere around the time you guys did. And he's like, dude, you're going to bring me out of retirement. I love this album that much. That's what I really feel is the strong point of this album, because I'm no expert still. I'm not some social media expert by any stretch, but learning the ropes in terms of, okay, putting out content and all that stuff, I'm doing it because I believe in the album, not because I want to be some social media maven. It's just like, I really want people to hear this album. Chris, for example, was like, when's the album coming out? Original release date was April 5th, bros. Obviously, it's not. Push the album back. He wanted it pushed to June. I was like, we had conversations. We went back and forth. We created at the time a 3-month plan, and it was February, March, April. February was Cleanse My Soul. March was Like We. Here we are in April, another single. May will be the album. So this 3 months was a plan that I honestly didn't come up with that on my own. It was thanks to him. My publicist is giving me information of what we should and shouldn't do, who I'm going to hit up, what podcast to be on, et cetera. So it required a team of people who, first and foremost, believed in the project and made me feel like, yeah, it was worth putting all this work into it.
Can I just say, am I the only one that is going to really see the irony of this when you do win a Juno, considering that the basis of a lot of the stuff that you're feeling now is, we talked about it last time, was that being overlooked, and this is going to be the one that is going to get you looked. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I would love that irony to take place, especially because, again, as you guys know, I'm from the school of whatever for awards. You know, they don't really determine what real hip hop is. But any artist would be lying if they said they wanted nothing to do with a nomination or a look like that from that type of entity like the Junos.
Okay. The question is, which one of your albums do you move out of the shelf behind you to put up your Juno?
Oh, great question. There's enough space up there. There's no awards up there.
We'll get another shelf.
Yeah, there it is. Right?
I was about to say, on that team that you have that you spoke of, who's the left fielder with the weak arm?
He's a left fielder with a weak arm. But maybe me. I'm still learning the ropes of how to promote.
There you go. That's online. The politically correct answer. Yeah. Good job. I do think it's, you know, just to touch on Tid's point, I do think it's funny that, you know, here you are, this guy who has fought the social media revolution. You have this song that's probably the best shit you've ever put out, which is literally all about social media. Mm-hmm. And that could be the one that gets you the trophy.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of layers of irony in there, but I think it's really cool, man. And continued success with the track, continued success with the album. As I mentioned off the top, go to daneo.com to pre-order Vigilante. You can it now. But we're not done with you. I want to get your take on a few different things that are happening in the world this week, Dan. Tid already mentioned it. He sort of threw it in there, right in the middle. And maybe I'll start with Tid. What was your reaction today, Mr. Tidwell, when you heard that Orenthal James Simpson had passed away at the age of 76?
My initial response was, if they do not put him in the back of a white Bronco and give him police escort to the cemetery, they are missing out on the greatest moment ever. That was my initial. Don't ask me what my initial thought was if you don't want to know. It wasn't like I pulled a Caitlyn Jenner or something.
That was as tid an answer as you could get.
Yeah.
Well done.
What about you, Dan?
Well, you hit me up with the news, bro. I tend to get a lot of the news from a Donnie text. It's like, this guy's on it.
Oh, he is one of, he's the Weekly World News. He is a rag magazine.
I read. I'm sorry.
I think my response was, yo, that's huge news, because obviously the story of Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman's murder is the biggest story to ever come out of anything O.J. Simpson related, regardless of his football heroism. I thought it was goofy as fuck today to see as many tributes as I did. He's a double murderer, and there's nothing to tribute. And that was my thought, is let's see how the world reacts to this. Because I'm like, you know what? I talked to my mom about it. She's like, well, you know, at least he finally got his comeuppance. I go, no, he didn't. He lived another 30 years, right? And, you know, those families.
Playing golf every day.
Playing golf. Yo, had the audacity, speaking of social media, had the audacity, bro, to get an account and start giving his take on shit like people were about OJ. Listen, man, I promise, not trying to use this as a plug, but the vigilante in me says someone should have got him a long time ago.
Right.
And honestly, you know, good riddance. You're a murderer. That's my thought.
My second thought on when was, hey, awesome. Now I own football jerseys of two dead murderers.
Wow. What is it? Hernandez?
Yeah, jersey, I got a Hernandez jersey.
You do, eh?
Yeah, and OJ's jersey. I got a Ray Lewis jersey because I'm convinced he must have somewhere in his life. He must have done somebody.
Wow. Those are some savage Halloween costumes, bro. Oh, wow.
Sid only collects jerseys of murderers.
That is true. That is true.
Wow. You got a Tom Brady in your closet? Because I think that guy is suspicious for a lot of shit.
Wow.
So my initial thought was, you know, at least now O.J. Simpson can rest peacefully knowing that the man who killed his wife is dead.
Yeah,
that was that was initially my first thought. But when I was looking on social, I was shocked at the number of people. And I think it's mostly these Gen Z trolls that are like, seriously, it's wild that he had 2,000 yards in a 14 game season. Who cares? Hmm. Like, are we kidding? Yeah. Like, you know, this is something that we just, it's irrelevant.
But at the same time,
you know, and I had a similar conversation with somebody last week, because it's WrestleMania week. So this name pops up and it was Chris Benoit.
Yeah, I was thinking.
And, you know, someone made a comment to me and said, you know, Chris Benoit deserves one day to get into the Hall of Fame. I'm like, no, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. And you're talking about me, a person who was a huge Chris Benoit fan. Yeah. I literally sat down with Jeff Merrick and Chris Benoit. We broke bread together on more than one occasion. I could never say he was a friend, but he was someone I would text with on occasion. He was someone that I had a familiarity with. And if I saw him, it was always like the, you know, the dap and the bro hug and all that shit, right? And then as soon as I heard this, I'm like, fuck him. I don't care if he was good at suplexes. He killed his wife and child. Mm-hmm. Fuck him.
Mm-hmm. We also, you got to remember though, we come from the same generation that it was cool to be walking around with a Charlie Manson t-shirt on.
Right.
Right, so there's a certain sect of people out there that's just early trolling. If you were walking around with a Charles Manson t-shirt on, you were trolling before there was the internet. You absolutely have to assume that people are not silly enough to actually think, oh, hey, he was just misunderstood, or he's just having a bad hair day. No, he's a fucking murderer.
Yeah, and I think what people need to realize, even if they're attempting really poorly to acknowledge a different part of his life or whatever he brought to football lore, or in Benoit's case, wrestling history, is even, like, for example, I think, is it CPT? What's the brain?
CTE.
What did I say? Compton. That's CPT. I'm still too fun. CTE. Even though there are arguments to be made that maybe that was impacting Chris Benoit, you still have to understand the impact of what happened. And out of respect for Daniel Benoit and Nancy, you have to respect their lives enough to go, I won't celebrate him because this is what happened to them. So same thing. Even if you're convinced, like, and I don't know who is, but OJ didn't do it. Like, you just don't have enough to go around with an OJ Simpson jersey or t-shirt on and not expect side eye. Like, come on, man. Those people were murdered. Yeah. And let's be real about what happened. We all really know. So I don't care how many Heisman Trophy, whatever his success was, it is irrelevant. And you just, even if there is doubt, because he was acquitted, right? There's reasonable doubt. Respect the dead more than you do a football career or a wrestling career.
He was acquitted because that prosecution team was a fucking disaster. But the last point I'll make on this was, you know, this past weekend, Dan was at my place all weekend. We were taking in WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And I told him about this thing where people, Tid, were getting all over Paul Heyman because during his Hall of Fame speech for the WWE, he mentioned a bunch of names of people that, you know, he was with early on, especially in the ECW days. And someone said to Paul afterwards in a press conference that, well, what about my boy Benoit? You didn't mention him. And he goes, oh yeah, fuck your boy Benoit. Mm-hmm. He said, you know what? That house in Atlanta, only one of three people had a choice not to die. That's it. And if he hated life so much, he should have just killed himself and moved on, you know? And Paul knew Chris very, very well. And he's not interested in sharing a Hall of Fame with that guy or anything. Switching gears. I want to throw this one at you, Dan, because I'm really curious to hear your take. The author of the Harry Potter series, J.K. Rowling, has said today that she will never forgive the stars of that franchise, Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson, for speaking out in support of trans rights.
Wow. She's going hard.
She has gone so far as to say trans rights take away from the rights that women have fought hard to earn.
Wow. She's really holding on to that one, man. That's crazy. I think that honestly, bro, and you know, we've had a lot of off camera, off show conversations about this. You know how huge I am on human equality, on peace, love, and harmony, you know, and you know, it always really just gets under my skin when there's a group of people being disrespected and prejudiced against. And I don't stand for that. This whole thing with, I don't know the specifics as to what Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Thompson have said outside of what you just did, but I do think that there's facets where you can say, okay, in this particular facet, I'm concerned about safety, for example. Like, we've talked a lot about, say, sports, MMA, and competitors who are trans fighting non-trans competitors. And the discussion is around whether or not that's fair in terms of their, say, muscle mass or body size and stuff. I've heard conversations like that give me pause and go, yeah, I can see a point if a person's health is in jeopardy. I understand points being made in that specific conversation. The simple idea of offering equal rights to human beings, though, I think is a non-negotiable topic. We all deserve to be treated equally, period. And if you're going to take that hard a stance, it shows me what side of the fence you're on.
It's pretty simple to figure out. It's really simple to figure out, guys. If you do not agree with somebody's personal life stance, don't fuck with them.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. If I don't like a show on TV, I can change the channel. It's not in my life. It's not in my wheelhouse. If you make it a point of going after somebody because of the life that they're living, then that's more a tale on the type of human being you are,
right?
Not the type of being they are.
I agree when the conversation goes one way, but and when we're looking at it back the other way, by your logic, I hear J.K. Rowling spitting anti-trans hate speech, and because I don't agree, I should just turn a blind eye and say, that's not for me, I don't care about that take. To me, it's the same as the difference between I'm not in favor of racism, and I am vehemently anti-racist.
Sure.
To me, it's the same. And when I hear a person say trans rights take away from women's rights, to me, that's the same as saying, well, white lives matter too.
Right.
It's stop giving this other group preferential treatment, because I want that preferential treatment. I deserve it.
And that's generally no one
ever tried to take it from you.
Yeah. That's generally where that type of hate comes from the people who have already experienced and enjoyed preferential treatment and feel somehow that it's going to be given to somebody else now, and therefore my rights have been taken. No, your rights aren't being taken. They're just getting the same ones that you've already enjoyed this whole time.
You have to share.
That's all it is.
Share.
Yeah.
You have to share. That's you know what I mean? Oh, somebody took my crayons. Wah, fuck off.
And this is what I mean. Specificity. I don't know if she said it, bro, but what type of rights does she think are being taken away from women?
There's a whole list of things, but you know, we don't have enough time to go into the deep dive of it. Regardless, it's if a person is trans, male or female, they are still a person.
100%. Still a person. 100%. Yeah.
I probably won't like the person if they're an asshole more so than what their deal is. You know what I mean?
That's my barometer for judgment too. Asshole or cool.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just because you're trans doesn't mean I'm down with you. Caitlyn Jenner's an asshole. You know,
that's so, the like, thing, right? They've just become a horrible human being. It has nothing to do with the lifestyle they choose to live.
That's the barometer we should be judging people by. Yeah. Agreed.
Switching gears, Tid, I don't know if I remember having a conversation about this with you in the past. I probably have, and I've forgotten because I'm getting old and I'm becoming a little senile. Are you a fan, or have you been a fan of the greatest television show of all time, Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I do appreciate Curb Your Enthusiasm, absolutely.
Did you check out the series finale on Sunday?
I have not as of yet, no.
Okay, it's... So as soon as WrestleMania 40 ended, Dan and I fired up the last episode of Curb, which just finished airing. It was fantastic. The show is great. Mm-hmm. I personally feel a small hole in my heart that after 24 years, there are no more new episodes of Curb coming.
Yeah.
But a funny story that came out this past week while Larry David was out promoting the final episode of Curb, which, by the way, he's like those old hip hop heads. He hates doing it.
Yeah, he does. I know that about him. Yeah.
He might be a rapper.
Yeah, he's old school like that for sure.
He's old school. But Larry David said, I don't know if you heard the story or not, Dan, he got his agent to get a hold of Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Okay.
And he got onto an hour-long phone call this past week with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And I heard both guys talk about this individually on two separate interviews. They both gave their take and they were surprisingly similar. So what happened was they got on the phone and Larry says, hey, Dwayne, you're starting this UFL football. Do we need the field goal posts?
Right.
Do we need goal posts? We don't need goal posts. Come on, Dwayne, let's get rid of the goal posts. Nobody likes the kicker.
Right.
You know, and he went on a rant for an hour. Field goals are stupid. Extra points are stupid. Get rid of it. And The Rock's like, well, we did get rid of extra points in the XFL. A touchdown to 7 points. He's like, hey, you get it. Okay, mi amigo. Right. All right, now how about the field goals and the punts? Just stupid. If it's fourth down, you lose the ball right there. That's it. The game is more fun. Nobody wants to see kicking. It's this tiny little nuanced part. He goes, imagine if a baseball game is tied at the end of nine innings, and then you have a guy step up to the plate and take a ball and just try to throw it into a net in the outfield.
Right.
He's like, yeah, it's a completely different skill that has right. nothing to do with everything else you've watched to this point.
Right, right, right. That sounds like it should have been an episode. That's the only thing the Rock said. Yeah, the only thing I get from that story is I'm sorry that the Rock was never a guest on Curb Your Enthusiasm, because that sounds like it would be unbelievable. Yeah, but that show is probably my favorite comedy series ever. Speaking of old school and speaking of collectors, I own every season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and yes, I will buy number 12 when it's out, and I can't tell you how much I love literally all 120 episodes. I don't think they took an episode off where I'm like, yeah, I didn't really laugh. It's always been funny. I think it supersedes Seinfeld. Yeah, it's unbelievable that it's been 24 years, 12 seasons. It is beyond hilarious. And I will, but I get his reasoning for.
In all fairness, 12 seasons over 24 years. Come on. He could have been like everybody else in Hollywood and just put him out at a normal pace. But he was like, no, I'm going to make all you assholes wait an extra year every single time. Right. Well,
it sounds even, but it wasn't. Sorry.
Well, exactly. He was convinced he was done. He didn't want to do anymore.
Well, he was they took a hiatus after season 8, so it wasn't as even as the math makes it sound. After 8, he took a few years off. Don, have you even seen Clear History yet? I keep plugging it.
Yes, I did watch it.
He did that, and he did something on Broadway, I think. So he took time off and came back, and I remember them going, HBO has an open contract for this guy. Like, we're never canceling your show. Whenever you want to do it, do it. He finally came back. So season 9 was the tagline was, he left, he did nothing, and he returned, or something to that effect. And then he did 9 through 12, and he called the shots. He's like, okay, I'm done now. HBO would keep going if he wanted.
I feel like Larry David's the kind of guy, though, that if he took time off, it was to go come up with new material, go have life experiences that he could bring back stories and create new episodes for.
I mean, he did talk about how he had anxiety when Seinfeld got renewed after season 3, because he's like, I can't think of anything else.
Right.
I'm done. I don't want to do it.
Talk about that. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm surprised, though, because the brilliance of both Seinfeld and the Curb shows are it's about everyday bullshit we always go through. They just make it a point to really be naggy about specific things. And I think that's the brilliance of the show.
I actually saw an interview where Jerry and Larry took great offense to this narrative that's out there about the Seinfeld show, that it's a show about nothing. Mm-hmm. He's like, we made that joke in one bit one episode, and it became the glue that everyone connected to our show. He's like, it's ridiculous that it's a show about nothing. It's a show about everything. Sure. It's a show about small things.
Agreed.
That's what it's really about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jerry took great offense to this tagline, the show about nothing, because that tagline stuck forever.
Right.
When Dan and I were watching the finale, there was a moment in the last act of the show when we thought, oh my God, Larry wrote this episode and he's going to kill himself off.
Yeah.
So there's no more Curb. and so the network can't be like, please, Larry, season 13, we'll give you whatever you want. Nope. Mm-hmm. I'm dead. You know, but thankfully, that door is still open. But Tid, your thoughts on Larry's request to The Rock? Should football get rid of goalposts?
I mean, if you're asking everybody but the kicker, then probably. But that dude's got bank. Kickers make a hell of a good living, and he can go around and tell people, I play in the NFL. Now, we know what that kind of, gets him, right? So
do you agree with him that it would be a more entertaining game without kicking?
It's kind of double-sided. I mean, yes, I understand what he's saying, because, you know, for the punting so much. But if you have those field goal attempts, when we've got guys now in the NFL that are kicking 60-plus yard attempts, it's just getting further and further back, and you have that possibility of that doink, that double doink coming off of there, those game-winning, field goal attempts that, is it going to make it? Do you ice the kicker? Like, so I see the drama and the allure of having that, the field goal kicker, but punting? I mean, come on. There's another word that rhymes with punt.
I think instead of the drama, I think instead of the drama of a 45-yard kick, I'd rather see the quarterback step back and air one out. And if you make it, you make it. And if you don't, you fucking lose.
Maybe you do something. Maybe you do something like how the NHL is doing overtimes now. It's 3-on-3. You take a bunch of players off the field, spread everybody out, and see if you can pass to a dude and just dodge the three or four dudes who's still on there, bro. Like,
throw in two weapons, one for each team.
Yeah, add weapons. Yeah, that's it. There you go. Chairs and tables. An episode
of Deadliest Warrior. Dan, everyone knows now, May 10th, my mom's birthday.
Ah, very nice.
Although I won't get to see her this year on her birthday. My mom is getting on a jet plane and heading to the motherland.
Well, that's how to do it.
So, but I will get on a video call with her on May 10th, and I will get myself my copy of Vigilante, and all of you out there can pre-order it right now by going to dan-e-no.com, and you can do that today, and then you can get it on the 10th of May.
Yes, sir.
It rhymes.
Well done. I got it.
Yeah, thank you. So make sure you go to YouTube and check out the video for the new song, Like We, featuring Blessed. It is Danny O's new track. And I'm telling you all, don't even give a shit if you're a hip-hop fan. Mm. This song will connect with you. I sent it to one of my good friends who doesn't really even like hip hop.
Right.
And she called me within 10 minutes and said, that fucking song is amazing.
That's so dope, man.
I'm telling you, it's the best shit that Dan has put out. And he's put out 500 albums over his career. So, or give or take. But there's been a lot of stuff, a lot of collabs, a lot of singles, a lot of music that he's put out over the years, a lot of featured on for other people. This is the best shit you have done, in my opinion. So I want everybody to get behind it. And we're all going to start writing letters to the Juno committee. Okay. That's what we're all. Mel Boogie, I'm coming for you. I'm getting in your inbox, Mel Boogie. And I'm telling you, Danny O, you need to make sure your boy gets himself a Juno nom.
This is the kind of album that'll make Helen Keller tap her feet.
Man, yo, right. Rose, I gotta tell you this. Something I want to say is I wanna shout out this incredible thing that the three of us once created. The Godfathers of Podcasting has a deep tie to the Vigilante album in several ways, and I want to shout that out real quick. Tid, first of all, thank you, man. Your recommendation to the homie Doug Knight panned out. Doug Knight of Cross Eye Comics is the illustrator of the Vigilante album cover. So that was a Tid referral. And not only is Doug a really dope dude, but man, is he talented. And for a legally blind artist to have taken the vision that I had in my head and the way that he came with it for this album cover, I couldn't be happier. Also, a huge thanks to both of you, because as you guys know, one of the reasons I had to take a leave from this very show was that I was so hyper-focused on this album. And many of the topics that the three of us discussed on this show during COVID, when we started the show, George Floyd's murder, Ahmaud Arbery's murder, I mean, the list goes on and you know what I'm talking about, made its way onto this album. This was one of the outlets that I was able to use to discuss my feelings about these things. But as you guys know, my number one outlet to express myself is my music. And thanks to you guys and the support you showed me both on the show and also the support you showed me when I had to leave the show to focus on the album. That's what helped make the album what it is. I put in a ton of effort and work, and with your support, you know, literally, I was able to focus and make it happen. So thank you, bros, for having me back, man, to obviously promote it. But also thank you for the support you gave me during the process of making it, because without it, I don't think it would be what it is. Much love.
Agreed. And that's why I want you to understand what you've just stated is a legally binding verbal contract that entitles Tidwell and I to royalties on this album. I want you to realize you just said publicly you could not have made the album without us. Therefore, we are both accepting EP credits and we are both taking a chunk of sales.
I was going to be free and give you all of that stuff. I just was going to be your plus one at the Junos. That's it.
Okay, well, I'm sure I can work that out, man, because y'all deserve it. And I appreciate you guys so much. Always have, always will, man.
The man who once had a comment, a line about even if he was nominated for a Juno, he wouldn't go because it's on WrestleMania weekend. And he was like, fuck that.
That once happened. There was a WrestleMania weekend, which was also the Junos. And those were the days where it's like all about WrestleMania. Yeah.
Tremendous.
Yeah. Hey, Junos, I'm sorry. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
I got to watch Stone Cold.
Yeah, regardless of what, man, this is my favorite record. And I'm proud of it. So looking forward to seeing what everybody else thinks. But I appreciate you guys for helping me push this thing.
Go to dan-e-o.com and pre-order now. Thanks, my brother. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Peace, guys.
Is he gone? The album sucks.
It really does. It's quite good. Quite good.
He's still there.
Listen, no, he's still around back there. Listen, here's the reality of it. And I've said this before about Dan's music. I either like it or I don't listen to it. And I listen to all of this album. Like I listen to it. You know what I mean? Because it's good. It deserves it. Listen, I'll be the first one to tell him. You know that, right? This one deserves every little bit.
I told him I really wanted it to suck because it's so much more fun to razz him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. But it's so you much can't.
More fun.
You can't on this one because you'd be a liar.
Yeah. Right? I really wanted to not like it. You know?
But that skin tone of his.
This big.
Dude, his hairline, it's horrendous. All right. We got to find something.
Let's wrap this bitch up. Remember, Absolutely. Go to dan-e-o.com and pre-order Vigilante. Also go to barbaronialbeard.com. And while we were doing this show, Tidwell, I just got news about a new sponsor that's going to be coming on board with us next week. So cool. I won't shut it out just yet, but the conversation is there, and I'm stoked because I really love their product, and I think it's going to be a cool thing for us to share with people. So come back next week. I meant to ask Dan, by the way, because next week's guest is a guy who he knows really well. We are scheduled to be sitting down with the man of a million voices, Eric Bauza, Toronto's own, Scarborough's own. And obviously Dan and Eric go back a million years. And Eric is one of the featured voices on the new Disney Plus show, X-Men 97. Now, I know that you always make fun of the Marvel shit, Tid, but back in the day, in the 90s, in the mid to late 90s, I used to watch the original X-Men animated show, and it was good. It was good. And this show, this new one, is so fucking good. It's
you're
so
such
good.
A fucking nerd.
It's so good.
Well, good. Good for
and
you.
And I'm sure Dan is like you. He hasn't watched a minute of it, but I'm sure his brother, the infamous comic head, has been all over it and telling Dan, yo, Dan, you got to watch X-Men 97. I'll bet you that conversation's happened at some point.
Listen,
and I'm telling you now, Tid, you should go watch X-Men 97.
Oh, I could tell you a few things you should go do to yourself, okay? Listen, regardless, irregardless, whatever it is, Eric Bauza is such an amazing talent, and it's been a minute since we've had a chance to catch up with him, and he's been just busier than a three-pecker billy goat. I can only imagine the stories he's going to have for us next week. So, you know what I mean? Check it out. Come back. See you then.
That's Tid. I'm Donnie. This is episode 171. It's the same forwards and backwards. You can listen to this whole show on Rewind, and I think it'll be the same. We'll see you next time.
Blessed be your Danny, oh. I saw the tingle. Okay, okay.
I'm instantly interested in every inkling of your existence. No, I'm not. But Instagram gives you that impression, and so you show a lot of pics and vids. Some intimate, some ignorant, and most are not legitimate. But if it may boost your rep, you'll consider it worthy of posting. It's dirty of boasting. You make more money than most men. Through cash, you like to hold up like a clothespin. I need ibuprofen. Sick at how you got your confidence. Your lies get your likes. I see through them with no optometrist. Honestly, I'm astonished with how, let's say, Twitter makes today's critters think there's a chance they can fucking play with us. Back in the day, spitters, I'm repping for all of us who laid the foundation but just haven't amassed the followers. Pride swallowers watching this new era of artists tearing apart this culture we care in our hardest. Scarily lost when they got no flow but to figure out an algorithm to make them more famous than that photo of Malcolm
thinking.
plates, they got served. Decades later, the pot stirred. They got replaced socially. For kids, a book is something they don't want to face, ironically. Okay. They educate themselves via perspectives of strangers based on the various posts that they've selected. To like and comment on so faster than Ramadan. Kids dress up to be frauds a lot, like they constantly go into Comic-Con. Who guess they give up real girls and dudes for bots? Live shows traded for live feeds with no food for thought. Live streams with no flows, no pros to hire and go see. Hands in the air and screaming, host swap for fire emojis. I'm dying here slowly, I find that I'm lonely, cause why don't my post see 100 likes? Okay. Yo, it's like nobody knows me, I don't get ticked. Real talk, I let embarrassment bounce and use the sky. I don't set limits by okay. character counts.
I'm not bad like we, I like we, and not tough like we, I like we. Long before Twitter, Facebook, and IG, the world know we. Them not tough like we, I like we, and not rough like we, I like we. Long before Twitter, Facebook, and IG, the world know we. Them fi know Maestro Fresh, them fi know me should be Stokely, from Chester Lee. Dream Warriors from Jane and Finch. Get a concept on GZP. With them the day when Danny Yoba done Electric Circus. When man, be the bad Linda make the place bust. Them fi know Ron Nelson, them fi know Master T. Sean Clear and the great Socrates. They not bad like we, I like we, they not tough like we, I like we. Long before Twitter, Facebook and IG, the world know we. And they not tough like we, I like we, they not rough like we, I like we. Long before Twitter, Facebook and IG, the world know we.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me, I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.